It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, Ebro, and if you are tuning into this episode, you already know what time it is, man. It is time for the DFS game-by-game breakdown. My co-host Adam Pfeiffer is riding with us on this episode. What's up, Adam?
I'm good, man. Nice. Had a nice Thanksgiving. Enjoyed watching Deshaun Watson do Deshaun Watson things. And, yeah, that game was pretty interesting. It, like, the first, what was it, the first, like, quarter, everybody was like, okay, nobody that I played in this game is scoring fantasy points. And then it really opened up. And then the second game is pretty cool, too, because the Washington players that we've been high on all year, they all kind of did their thing. So, yeah, I'm excited to break down this full slate now, and there's a lot of interesting games here. I was breaking down this slate and taking notes last night, and there was, like, each time I thought I was done with a game, there was another piece of the puzzle that I had to add, because there's a lot of moving parts for this slate, too.
Dude, I was excited to get into this slate, and while we were watching all of the fantastic Will Fuller action, you just gotta love it when Will Fuller is just coughing, like, all these dudes that were hating on him going into the season.
Yeah, like,
you really love to see it, yeah, man. You do.
You were really off Will Fuller, so I'm glad I talked you in on him.
Dude, I don't want to waste any more time. We have got to introduce a very special guest that we have this week. Ryan Noonan has been putting out fantastic content across all three of the FTN sites. He's been smashing all bets every single week. You can follow him on Twitter at Ryan Noonan. Ryan, what is going on, dude?
How we doing, fellas? This is I'm excited for this. You know, D-Bro, we did some underdog stuff in the preseason. This is my first rodeo with Pfeiffer, which I am excited for. Just excited. This is, you know, we're kind of learning the slate together. We're really just focusing on Thanksgiving. So unpacking this entire week 12 slate is going to be interesting. So happy to be here, guys.
Dude, this is going to be awesome, man. We were talking before we turned the mics on. You are crushing bets this year. I mean, tell everybody, I know you don't want to toot your own horn. Well, maybe you do.
That's not true.
I'm trying to be nice. But, dude, you are smashing bets. What are you at, like, top three, top two over at the Fantasy Pros Betting Pros competition right now?
I was crushing. I was one for a while. I went on a really ice-cold three-week stretch, but off to a good start. 2-0 yesterday, 4-0 on my bets over at FTN Bets, which is a good start to the week to get up on units, trying to just keep up, stay in the team pitcher with the big dog at the top. Kevin Adams absolutely crushing. So it's been awesome. The team's been great. And, yeah, you know, even a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while.
Dude, if people are not tuning in to you every single week, it's you, Elliot, and Noah over at FTNDaily.com, FTNBets.com. They need to be getting signed up, need to be checking out to the window. It is fantastic content. So sign up today with promo code FTC, save 10%, and you've got to tune into this, man. I mean, it's free money, man. Like, if they're not tuning in, I don't know what the hell they're doing. But we have got to get into all of these games, kick this bad boy off. The first one on the docket is Tennessee versus Indy. The over-under is set at 51.5. Indy is actually favored by 3. Noonan, what do you think about this game, man? Who stands out?
It's going to be a good game. I mean, rematch what we had just a couple weeks ago on Thursday night. Big win there for you know, the Colts. But, you know, moving back here, you know, we're seeing a lot of trends as far as usage in that Indy backfield. And it's a mess. It's really hard to do. They kind of were honest last week and said they're going hot hands. We saw a little bit of balance early. We got a little bit of hot hand Taylor in the second half. It'd be hard for me to think that we're not going to have, you know, a lot of Hines, especially early again, to allow him the chance to kind of replicate his week 10 success in that spot. I think the big story here, no DeForest Buckner up front for Indy. You know, Indy's been a tough defense to kind of contextualize. Just haven't played anyone of strength as of late. I mean, really good second half, though, against Green Bay. So without DeForest Buckner, I think you maybe see a lot of big dog. And I really like this passing game on Tennessee side. I feel like a team that's built for a fast turf. And, I'm still a little bit reluctant to think that Indy is absolutely elite avoid defense in DFS. So getting some of that passing game, I don't think is going to have any ownership. Corey Davis is a dude we never talk about. He's just never exciting. But if you look at the game logs and the usage, he is pretty consistent week in and week out. So, you know, nice pivot from A.J. Brown, who's always going to collect more ownership there. And I'm about as big of a Michael Pittman stan as you can get. So it's really tough on the Colts side. They spread it around. You're seeing consistently 10, 12 guys catching balls. But Pittman is the alpha. He is on the come there. So that would definitely be something that I want to look at in that game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that all the injuries make this game extremely interesting. I mean, we got Quentin Nelson's log DMPs back-to-back. Ryan Kelly's got a few DMPs. And so the offensive line for the Colts, I mean, I think that backfield is really difficult to diagnose, obviously, every single week. With Taylor's usage last week, I think people are going to gravitate. And I'm with you. I'm actually going to the other side of the ball. I just want the Tennessee offensive line to have a few dudes healthy, man. Like, they're so damn banged up. I mean, you got Dennis Kelly logging two not practices. Ben Jones is having some issues. Saffold was out last week. If we get a healthier line, I'm with you. I think it's another spot to go back to Derrick Henry. I was in on him last week, and this Indy defense is banged up, man. Okereke has not practiced so far. We'll see what he does on Friday. They also have one of their starting safeties out. You talked about Buckner. So we're talking about the heart in the middle of this defense for the Colts, which has been, I mean, absolutely outstanding versus running backs. But again, like, you got to look at some of the game logs and who they played. I think it's a spot to go back to Derrick Henry. I just, before, like, pressing the button on him, I want to see at least, I mean, some type of health for his offensive line, because it's going to swing how much Derrick Henry I have this week. But I'm definitely in on him, and I like the Pittman call, man, because I think he'll see a lot of Malcolm Butler, not exclusively in this game, but it needs to be brought up here. Malcolm Butler started off the season played some pretty good football, man, but since week six, I mean, he's been beatable, man. Two touchdowns on his coverage and a 112 passer rating, so they have used him to shadow some dudes in previous weeks. If he's going to see a bunch of them, I have no doubt that he could beat him deep. And I'm sorry, like, T.Y. Hilton is dead to me. I cannot play him. I'm not going to go with the tight ends in this spot. It's a spot that's, if we could mash them all into one guy, Tennessee has been terrible versus tight ends, but I'm not going to play that game because you're looking at a ceiling of, like, you're hoping they get into the end zone and you pick the right guy of the three, and you're looking at probably a ceiling of, like, 30 yards. But, Adam, anybody else standing out to you? Are you willing to go with a Colts pass catcher outside of Pittman here?
I'm not playing Michael Pittman, and it has nothing to do with Michael Pittman. It's the fact that there's been multiple games this year where the Colts have targeted 10 or more players in a game. Like, that's ridiculous. That's so many players getting targeted. So, like, Pittman could easily go for, like, 4 for 80 and a touchdown and break a long one. But, like, at 5K, his ceiling for targets is, like, 5. And I think you can get, like, Corey Davis probably has a higher target ceiling, and he's, you know, $100 cheaper in the same game. I think there's just better players for target projection around that price range. I really wish these Colts tight ends were just one player, because it's a great spot. I mean, Tennessee, I talked about it last week with Mark Andrews, the games they've given up, and you talked about it a lot too, D-Bro. When they face tight ends that are involved in their team's passing game, they give it up. I mean, Jimmy Graham had 6 for 55 and a touchdown. Ebron had 6 for 50. Darren Fells had 6 for 85 and a touchdown. Noah Fant back in week one had 5 for 81 and a score. Eifert had 3 for 40 and a touchdown. And then Mark Andrews last week. Mo Alie-Cox is only 2,700. He ran 16 pass routes, which isn't a lot, but it led the Colts tight ends. The Colts tight ends have combined for 35% of the Colts end zone targets this year. So if you're punting at tight end, like, taking a shot on Burton or Mo Alie-Cox, I think, like, the Colts tight ends score twice in this game, whether it's one for Mo Alie-Cox and one for Burton or one for Doyle. I don't know, but I think they score twice in this game, so I like that. And then, yeah, like, you can't play Jonathan Taylor unless it's in a tournament. Like, I know he looked his best last week, but he could easily go back to 12 touches in this game. And if he fumbles by chance, he's done. Like, absolutely done. So, yeah, like, Rivers has been playing well, but I don't love him at his price. I'm probably not going to play A.J. Brown I think it could I wrote him up in my Prize Picks article. I took the under, and it could easily cost me because he's so good and so talented. But the Colts are dead last in missed tackles. They missed the fewest tackles in the NFL, and they're top five in terms of yards after the catch allowed. And we know that's where A.J. Brown is really dangerous. I know he had like a 75-yard touchdown that he dropped in this game in Week 10. But I just think at his price, there's other receivers I like a little bit more. And he's averaging only like six targets per game with Corey Davis in the lineup. Like, people aren't really paying attention to how good Corey Davis has been this year when he's been on the field. And when he's been on the field, A.J. Brown's gone from like an 8-9 target per game guy to like six. So, and an already low-volume passing offense, that drop is enough for me to kind of not be crazy about A.J. Brown this week.
Well, one guy that we haven't talked about here, and I talked about, so they're missing linebacker, they might maybe missing a safety and stuff. The other guy I want to get up in here for Tennessee is Jonnu Smith. And look, I'm not telling you that he is probably going to make my 3-max build. I have some interest, though, if you're running 2150, because the fact of it is with Jonnu, like, we've seen the targets bounce back in recent weeks. He's had six targets in each of his last two games. If the Colts are going to be softer over the middle, I mean, that's the guy that I want, because if we're talking about the outside corner play, it has been pretty good to this point, and I know we've crapped on it in recent weeks, and I'm still not fully sold that the Colts are just a shutdown pass defense. But Noonan, are you willing to go back to Jonnu in this spot, or is he just getting too cute?
I don't hate it by itself. I mean, you have to kind of look at the position as a whole this week, and it's been such a crapshoot all year. And this week we actually do have kind of the two alphas since Kittle's gone out, is mm-hmm. you know, Kelce and Waller. And, you know, kind of that middle range has been tough because you're just not getting a lot of ceiling. Like, even if you look at, you're seeing the targets, like you mentioned, it's trending up. That's encouraging. It just, this week, you know, if I've mentioned, you know, these indie tight ends thinking that they're going to catch touchdowns, like, it might be the way to go. If you are not going to pay up for Waller or Kelce this week, I'm probably not hanging out in the middle too much and really just absolutely punting the position, hoping that I back into a touchdown. So, you know, the Smiths of the world, unless it's a game stack situation, he's probably an avoid for me.
And he's still, yeah, like, his targets and stuff and his red zone usage has been up lately, but he's still literally, like, splitting routes with Anthony Firkser. Like, he's mm-hmm. not running, like, yep. Mark Andrews, Travis Kelce, you know, Logan Thomas-type routes in a game. Not even close.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely get it, man. I mean, I think that's a good call, Ryan. Like, with and we'll kind of get to this through the later games. I think this is one of those weeks where it's like you either got to, like, you got to make your choice. Like, either you're going to punt or you're going to pay up. And the guys that we usually pay up for are in fantastic spots. So, moving on to the Panthers are going to head to Minnesota. The over-under is set at 51.5. The Vikings are favored by 3.5 in this game. Adam, what's your thoughts here?
Yeah, so this game's interesting because, like, the Vikings are obviously a slow-paced team, but you look at these defenses, they both allow touchdowns on 49.1% of their opposing drives. It's tied for the worst rate in the NFL. So, like, we could see some points in this game. Now, we need to, you know, we're recording this Friday morning. It's weird, like, Adam Thielen was placed on the reserve COVID list earlier in the week, and then he had, what, a positive test, a negative test, and we haven't heard anything since. So, if he's good to go, then that obviously, you know, you kind of know what this offense is going to be. If he gets ruled out, then it's a lot of Dalvin Cook and it's a lot of Justin Jefferson, who probably becomes one of the more chalky plays of the slate. Just because, like, if they throw the ball 30 times in a game with Thielen healthy, it's probably like 8 or 9 to Thielen and 6 or 7 to Jefferson. But if they throw the ball 30 times without Thielen, I mean, it's, you know, you could say 12 of those targets probably go to Justin Jefferson. So, yeah, we got to keep an eye on that, obviously. It looks like Teddy Bridgewater is going to be back for the Panthers, which might help Robbie Anderson more. But, like, Robbie Anderson is not – so Robbie Anderson had a 75-yard touchdown back in Week 1. He's not scored since. Like, his red zone usage has completely fallen off a cliff. He's behind Samuel. He's behind DJ Moore. So that definitely hurts him. Like, they're the same. They're pretty much the same price. I'm probably going to take DJ Moore against these corners, but they could obviously both win. And then, yeah, I guess the other question is, what do we do with Mike Davis? McCaffrey's expected to probably be out again. Davis hasn't been, like, nearly as good since the beginning of the year when he took over, but he's still getting, you know, 18 to 20 opportunities a game. Minnesota's run defense is like middle of the pack. They were bad against Zeke and Dallas last week, but I don't know. Davis is kind of priced in that range as well, where it's like, you know, Nick Chubb's around him, James Robinson's around him. I don't know. He's kind of tough for me.
This game feels really straightforward to me, and I love some Teddy Bridgewater in this matchup, man. Like, Minnesota has been good against running backs. They've been good as a run defense. They've been absolutely – and it doesn't matter which corner you talk about. Like, which week you're talking about it. There's not a corner on their damn depth chart that can actually cover anybody. Like, Chris Boyd's been terrible. Jeff Gladney's allowed 7 freaking touchdowns in the slot. You have Dantzler on the outside. His slow ass runs a 4.6. So Robbie can burn him on the outside. I love Teddy, and if you were going to tell me you wanted to stack it up with, like, 2 of these guys and which ones you want to go to, I want exposure to these wide receivers, and I want exposure to this passing game. This game just feels like it's so freaking straightforward. It's Carolina passing, taking advantage of these terrible, terrible corners, and you run it back with Dalvin Cook. Log out. Like, if people want to play Justin Jefferson, if Thielen's out, that's fine. I'm fine eating some chalk with Dalvin Cook because we're going to look at, like, you can get different in other spots of your lineup. Like, I'm more worried about the roster percentage of my overall lineup. And whether Thielen plays or not, like, I think this is a game you can fully game stack. The over-under is high. I'm not worried so much about the pace because I think that this game could really have some scoring in it. So the other guy I want to bring up here is if Irv Smith is out, man, like, we're talking about punts here. Kyle Rudolph is 2,800, man. Like, Minnesota's been evolving. Like, they run a ton of their red zone offense through their tight ends. Rudolph is going to split some routes with Conklin if Irv is out. But Conklin's a blocker, man. I'm not worried about him in the passing game. So we're talking about punt options at tight end. I think it brings Rudolph into play as far as if you're game stacking this game. And like I said, this game just feels really straightforward, man. Like, Minnesota's also dealing with some injuries. Like, Harrison Smith is dealing with a neck issue. He had a DNP and then a limited practice. They also have one of their defensive linemen is also having some practice issues. So it for a team that has bad corners, if one of their star safeties could be out, as well as defensive line is banged up, dude, they're not going to be able to pressure Teddy in this matchup. I like this game a ton, but Noonan, am I off here? Like, are you willing to stack this game?
Yeah, I mean, I am. I think you made a good call. I mean, the simple Carolina side, bringing it back with Dalvin, who I think, again, kind of looks like he's going to be the guy this week. And it makes sense. I mean, price keeps going up, but the workload is still there to maintain the value there. You know, we have the revenge narrative on Teddy's side, if you're into that, too. It's a little bit tougher for Carolina, just because we've seen a little bit more of Curtis Samuel a little bit, so that's impacted the other two, but I think it's a great spot for all of them. There are definitely ways to get contrarian here if you want to play the ownership game with a similar stack that Debro laid out. Also, like, Vikings actually really struggling up front. I mean, they're 30th in rushing success rate on the year. They're 31st in EPA per rush over the past 5 weeks. I think that Davis, like Fife said, is kind of in no man's land pricing wise. Like, we'll have to see where ownership is, but I think he's probably 5% or less. I think that's a really nice tournament play. We're, you know, a little concerned about overall pace here, but at the same time, both defenses are pretty terrible. And I, you know, at the end of the day, like, I think we're going to have some efficiency on offense, and I worry a little bit about play volume. I mean, Minnesota consistently runs very few plays and is racking up, you know, upwards of, you know, mid 20 points. They're having some success offensively, and the defense is terrible. So I think there are other ways to do it too. You can stack the Minnesota passing game, or, you know, have just kind of one of those correlated one-offs where you wanted to get cute with, you know, putting Davis in the lineup and bring it back with whether it's Thielen or if he plays or Jefferson. I think that's kind of one of those little correlated plays to play in another stack because Davis is not going to have any ownership.
Yeah, I like that call. I mean, Mike Davis is going to get all the work in this backfield, and I think there's just a lot of different ways. Like, even if, like you're talking about, even if you didn't want to game stack this, if you're looking at Carolina pass catchers that are all there, none of them are breaking the bank here, man. Like, Samuel's still in the 5Ks. We've seen his role. He's getting rushing attempts. I think there's a lot of different ways that if you wanted to even have this as a mini correlation or wanted to run two guys on one side and one on the other, there's a lot of different ways that you don't necessarily have to stack the game, but I definitely want exposure to this game because I think that on the Minnesota side, we know where the ball is going. It's extremely consolidated as far as where they're going for touchdown equity, where they're spreading their targets to. So whether you wanted to go with one of the guys on that side and get two Panthers in your lineup, I just think there's a lot of different ways here, man. Like, I have a lot of interest in this game. So moving on to another game that I think is one of the ones that you really, really want to get right for this slate. Chargers are heading to Buffalo. The over-under is set at 53. The Bills are favored by 5 in this spot. Adam, I know you're going to sit here and jump into this, so I might as well lead off with you, man. Come on. Tell me about your Bills' love this week.
I mean, Josh Allen's a goat. I don't know. What else do you want me to say? No, like, so John Brown got ruled out this morning for Buffalo with the ankle, and people are going to freak out about his game logs without John Brown this year and how he's worse in fantasy. But you have to also understand that in those games, one was a terrible weather game in Kansas City. One was the Jets game where he had 300 passing yards, but the Bills' red zone offense was bad, and he had a touchdown called back and a terrible legal formation penalty. And then the other was the New England game where they threw the ball 18 times because that was their game plan coming in, and they knew that they were going to run the ball against New England with success, and they did. Like, Singletary and Zach Moss combined for, like, 160 yards and two touchdowns. So I'm not worried at all about Josh Allen without John Brown. The Chargers games have seemingly gone over 50 points every week except for the Miami game as of late, and they're banged up on the defensive end right now. Melvin Ingram and Casey Hayward, who still is legit one of the best corners in the NFL, they have not practiced yet this week. So for me, like, I'm still going to play Josh Allen. I'm still going to play Stephon Diggs. If you want to play Beasley, you know, we know Beasley's better with John Brown. And Gabriel Davis is down there at 3K. So there's still ways to go in this Buffalo offense. You know Josh Allen's going to have the rushing equity. And this Chargers defense has just been really, really bad. I mean, their games are they're playing pretty fast. All their games are pretty much going over the total. Buffalo's at home. We know Buffalo's going really pass-heavy on offense, and that's making their games faster. So, yeah, there's obviously a lot to like about this game from both sides. But, you know, with John Brown out, I am not really – like, would it be nice if, you know, Josh Allen had John Brown to stretch the field? Yeah, absolutely. But it's not going to take me off him or anything like that by any means.
Noonan, so are you willing to stack either side of this game? Are you going with Allen or Herbert? Or is it just like I can get behind both of these quarterbacks here?
Stacking both. I mean, if yes. You have to. So I think it's really important when you look at projections, you know, and I don't know what the demographic of the listener is as far as are we hand building? Are we using, you know, our FTN optimizer? A lot of times, so an optimizer is definitely going to be built around projections based off of team totals and game totals. But I think that sometimes the skeleton key that most people aren't thinking about is it's where are we projecting the game to go over the total? So where are the projections wrong? Because projections are going to drive ownership. And this is a spot, even with a high total like this, 53, 53 and a half, depending on your book, there's shootout potential here. There is 60-point total. And those aren't baked into projections. So there is even more ceiling here than I think the initial total is telling you. So, you know, if you are 3-maxing, I think it makes sense to, you know, maybe you have one of each. If you are obviously, you know, getting up into the 20s from a lineup standpoint or, you know, 150 lineups, obviously you're going to have a huge share of these two. I'd want to be above weights on the field. There are just so many ways for them to do it. They both have rushing equity. They have big playability, obviously. They have dynamic ways to bring it back. They have cheap ways to bring it back, as mentioned with Gabriel Davis. So there are a ton of ways to skin the cat here. I think the big piece is the running back situation with the Chargers. We talked about a little bit before we hit record. The Eckler piece, I think, is very interesting. He becomes maybe standalone by himself if he is a full go. If not, then Ballage is obviously very viable. I know we like to beat on Ballage, but he is a pretty dynamic size, speed, talent. I mean, we'll never be able to unsee him ducking from a pass attempt in Miami. And I'm not going to make a case for him being good, but there's a reason that he's in the NFL as a running back, and he's been involved in the passing game as of late too. So that raises his floor massively on a full PPR site like DraftKings. So there are a lot of ways to do it. I think mixing up the ways that you get exposure to this game make a ton of sense. But I think the Eckler piece is massive. I mean, he could be in a bring back, you know, if you want to get a little cheaper than Keenan on a, you know, a Josh Allen stack. as a bring back. I think he's viable with his work in the passing game as a piece with the Justin Herbert stack. So I think that is some big news here on the slate. You know, we get that news. It'd be interesting to see. I think either way, we're going to have depressed ownership on him. Even if he's active, people want to see, is he going to be worked in? You know, these are little ways for us to leverage ownership in the field, kind of understanding how the group is going to think about it. So there are a ton of ways, and I think this should be a part of single entry, three max, and obviously expand it as we get out.
Yeah, man. Look, I have a ton of interest on Eckler right now. Like, it's really curious because you saw, like, we saw on Twitter, he came out on Twitch, talked about how, like, he feels 100%. He's tested it. He's tried to run and cut and make, like, something hurt, anything hurt, to where he'd not be 100%. Now, we'll see, like, monitoring things all the way up to Sunday on whether he plays and stuff. If he plays, like, Noonan, how many times do we have to see running backs come back from injuries and just smash, and people are like, but they could be a decoy. They could not get work. We're not really sure. And Kalen Ballage, we're already talking about, he's got limited practices, man. He's dealing with some injuries too. So if Eckler is going to play, let's squash this narrative here. If Eckler plays, do you think they limited him, or do you think he's just going to be ready to rock?
I think he's going to be ready to rock. Well, let's be honest anyway. Eckler is a guy that is not a 20-touch guy most weeks anyway.
Yes.
So, you know, if we're looking at 15, 16 pretty efficient touches, some of them coming through the air in a game that I think is going to be close to 60. Yeah, I mean, so Melage has really emerged, right? But mostly through attrition. And that running back room has really been anything but consistent. We know Anthony Lynn is a running back guy. Eckler is the dude here. So if he is back, I mean, the guy is like doing squats on Instagram, and like, he's back. He's going to be ready to roll. If he's active, you know, we'll obviously look at what we see projection wise for ownership, but like, I will not hesitate to have him in my player pool. You know, he's not going to be a cash game core or anything like that, because there's obviously massive downside. But yeah, I mean, do I think that he can get there on a pretty efficient 12 to 15 touches? I think he can be a fantastic play.
Like, if he gets 12 to 15 touches against Buffalo's run defense, he could legitimately go for 100 yards. Like, the Bills' defense as a whole has been better lately, but they're still very, 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 very beatable on the ground. They get up 100 yards of Kenyon Drake before the bye week. Like, they're still – and, like, Matt Milano being out is still massive, and that's why only in game stacks will I consider Hunter Henry. He's kind of too expensive for his ceiling. Like, he's giving you four catches every week, literally, but it's, like, four catches on seven targets for 35 yards. If he scores, it's great. But other than a game stack, I probably won't play him. But the Bills, I mean, without Matt Milano, they've just been terrible, especially against tight ends. They get, you know, the most yards and most receptions per game, like 65 almost yards per game to tight ends. So in a game stack, I like Hunter Henry. But other than that, I probably won't get to him.
Agreed.
Yeah. I just feel like there's so many different ways you could stack this game, get contrarian. Like, whether you want to talk about, like, Cole Beasley's gotten a crap ton of work whenever we haven't had John Brown, man. Like, and the Chargers do not cover the slot well. Like, they jettisoned Desmond King off to Tennessee, and they're still terrible versus the slot. Like, Campbell has not been great. 15 targets, 11 receptions. I think that you, even if Dawson Knox is out, we've seen Tyler Kroft get a lot of red zone work. The Chargers are tied for the most touchdowns allowed to the tight end position. Kroft's in that punt conversation. I won't play him as, like, obviously a one-off or anything, but if you're stacking this game, especially if you're going with Josh Allen, if you're punting, if Allen goes for four touchdowns, I can't tell you that Kroft, because we've seen him spread it around in the red zone. I can't tell you that Kroft doesn't have one of these, like, rando two-touchdown games. So as a punt consideration, I think that he is in play. But there's just so many damn ways that you can go on this game. And for everybody that wants to talk about Tre'Davious White and all this other kind of stuff, he's only played in the slot 2.2% of his snaps this year.
No, he's not covering Keenan. He'll probably cover Keenan Allen, two or three routes.
He's not going to be on him, man.
They're going to put Trey on Mike Williams, and Mike Williams is probably going to catch like one 40-yard catch, and he's going to land awkwardly like he does every game. I mean, I'm not even making fun of him. Like, that's literally what happens every week.
He's incredible. I'm not, man.
But yeah, like, Keenan Allen's finally priced to 8K, and it's like, okay, where the hell have we been? I still want to play him. We know Buffalo's been more vulnerable in the middle of the field. Keenan Allen's in the slot like 50% of the time on the season. And yeah, I don't believe Trey White is going to follow him or anything like that. So yeah, like, the only players we're not on this game are the Bills running backs, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not touching that group.
Unless you want to play, Jalen Guyton at 3,100 and his two targets, but
well,
I'd rather just play Davis.
Right, I'd rather play Gabriel Davis. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, well, I'm going to go back. I'm going to rehash this a little bit. Yes, I do have interest in the Bills' running backs. I'm just going to play their goal line back, who happens to pass too. I'll just play Josh Allen,
and then you can play their second goal line back, Isaiah McKenzie. I'm kidding.
Dude, I love this game. I really, really do. I feel like there's so many different ways that you could stack this game up.
Yeah, but, dude, how tilted are you going to be when Josh Allen has four touchdowns? One goes to Gabriel Davis, one goes to McKenzie, one goes to Croft, and one goes to, I don't know, Gilliam.
I'll be okay because Eckler's got right. You know, 150 total yards and two scores.
Damn right, man. So I love this game. It's one of my favorite on the slate. Moving over to a game that just there's some definite nasty around this game. The Browns are heading to Jacksonville. Cleveland is favored by 6.5. The over-under sits at 49.5. That's a little bit surprising. Noonan, what do you think about this game, man? I do think, and I know I kind of poo-pooed this game walking into it, there's some interesting parts and pieces of this game, but what are your thoughts here?
It's been hard to cap the Browns because we've seen them play like four straight monsoon games. So it's really hard to get. It's
supposed to rain like in Jacksonville, by the way.
Oh my gosh. It's unbelievable. holy crap. I feel so bad for them. I mean, we really haven't been able to see any passing volume to speak of, which we don't typically see. We know that they want to run the ball and they are designed and built to do so. We just really haven't had a great feel for what a average to high above average passing volume looks like with them without Odell. It becomes the running back situation, obviously. And for some reason, it's massive decrease in price for Kareem Hunt here, who has been like 67 to 7K on DraftKings, even with Chubb coming back. And now he's down to 56 in an absolute smash spot. He's getting like Chubb is literally like, it's Josh Jacobs and Derrick Henry and Chubb. Like, they are not really involved in the passing game. And Hunt is getting not only passing game work, but he's getting inside the five, inside the 10 touches too, you know, regardless of game script. So he becomes a great play. We know that there is a quarterback change on Jacksonville, which I think is probably Debro's hesitation around the game total. You know, Mike Glennon, I mean, it can't be worse than Jake Luton. It was a pretty rough stretch there. They were 31st in EPA with him at quarterback. Just checks out. Thank God for the Bears. Prevent them from being the dead last team in offensive efficiency. But we have James Robinson games when we don't have Chris Thompson. That always makes sense. I'm still a little bit bitter that Devin Ozigbo came in and caught three balls on four snaps in the fourth quarter last week when I had a James Robinson over receptions ticket. That was pretty tilting for the dude to come in and just touch the ball every time he was in the game. But you get a good love Robinson. He's 6,300. Again, not a sexy spot per se, but you know, the Browns aren't a team that we need to worry about. He's kind of locked in for 20 touches in a game. You know, they have a team total around 21.5. So it's pretty healthy. Mike Glennon is dirt cheap. You know, if DJ Chark was in, I would understand the punt play, but we need to see Chark practice today. I think he's dealing with ribs heading into Friday's practice report. So otherwise, you know, running backs are of interest to me, but no, pass catchers are all pretty much an avoid. Austin Hooper's kind of in that no man's land for tight ends. I guess he's a little appealing, but I think I'm going to be in that Kelsey Waller or bust this week.
Yeah, man. I mean, look, I've been on the Hooper train, but we just haven't seen the passing volume. And like you're talking about, we know what Cleveland wants to do. They want to run the damn ball. I love the Kareem Hunt call here because I think that everybody's going to gravitate to Chubb. And I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. But if you look at over the last 2 weeks since Chubb has been back, Chubb has got, like, obviously back-to-back 100-yard games. Hunt's the guy that's not only, like you're talking about, getting the pass game usage, but he's also out-carried Nick Chubb 9-2 in the red zone. So for all the reasons people want to gravitate to Nick Chubb, I get it. But the usage is not different. Hunt has the pass game usage, and he quietly has the red zone usage. It's just that Chubb has been breaking off long runs. And that's where if you're box score chasing, you're looking at, oh, he's got touchdowns. And, oh, yes, he ran out at the two or the one, which I'm not still tilting over at all. But dude, I actually really like Kareem Hunt in this spot. I'm with you. I'm not on the pass catchers. I looked at DJ Chark just because Cleveland is banged up in the secondary. Denzel Ward is out in this game. I would have some interest in Chark because he's been getting a lot of deep targets. Cleveland has struggled versus deep passing this year. I would be looking at that as like more of a mini correlation. I don't want to stack this game up, but if you were telling me like, look, like for Hunt, who legit, I think has two touchdown upside in this spot, could rush for 100 yards, especially if they're going to feed the running backs like they did in previous weeks. I could get behind like going a mini correlation if we do get Chark in this spot. But if Chark is out, it's probably either play Chubb or Hunt and just move on. But Adam, what are your thoughts here, man?
Yeah, so like last week, Chubb had that instance where he came out like multiple times when they were inside the 10. One was for a contact lens issue. The other was for like a cleat issue. But like even before that, Chubb was losing red zone work to Hunt anyway. I think they're both in play for sure. Like Nick Chubb, despite missing, what, five games this year, still leads the NFL in 20-plus yard rush runs. And Jacksonville this season, they're giving up, I think, the fifth most runs of 20 yards or more. They give up the second most points per drive in the NFL. Like, they're just not a good defense. And we know Cleveland's going to run the ball. You know, they're running the ball 52% of the time, highest rate in the NFL. But, like, a lot of people will see Chubb back and say, okay, I can't play Kareem Hunt now. But, like, if you look at his splits, in the six games he's played with Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt's still averaging nearly 14 rushing attempts per game. Like, it's not like he's getting, like, it's not like he's becoming, like, you know, a five-touch game guy. Like, he's legitimately, and at 5,600, like, he's getting 13 rushing attempts per game and around three receptions per game. So if you give me 16, 17 touches at 5,600 against Jacksonville, like that's more than enough volume for him at that price. And then, like I said, I do like Chubb. I like Hunt. I don't want to, but I might walk into some Baker at 5,300 just because Jacksonville's that bad. And if Baker can throw for a couple touchdowns, he'll meet value. You look at our you know, fantasy points expectation tool. Like, Jacksonville's allowing like over 3.5 fantasy points below expectation. That's the worst in the NFL to quarterbacks. Like, they're really, really bad. And Baker at 5,300, like, he doesn't have to do much. He could throw one to Hunt, he could throw one to Hooper and have like 200-something yards. I understand the volume's not there, but like, you look at the quarterbacks on this slate, there's really not anyone else down there. Like, maybe Daniel Jones we'll talk about, and then there's Baker, and then there's really nobody else, unless you want to play Sam Darnold, who looks like he's going to start. And then for Jacksonville, like, James Robinson's kind of always in play, especially when he's priced where he is. He's just, you know, he has like 96% of the rushing attempts on the year, all their goal line work. Maybe he catches more passes with Glennon under center because his pass catching work kind of went down when Jake Luton took over. So that would definitely be helpful. And if, you know, Chark or Conley miss, like, Keelan Cole's 3,600 and Cleveland's been so bad against the slot, like, all year long. It's not sexy, but Cleveland, second most fantasy points per game to the slot, second most touchdowns per game to the slot, fourth most yards. Like, they've been really bad, but yeah, this is mostly a Cleveland side for me. They should kind of control this game, and that's why I'm a little bit worried about Baker. He might only I tweeted the other day, Baker Mayfield hasn't thrown 30 passes in a game since, I think, week five. I'm an idiot. Week five against Indianapolis was the last time he threw the ball 30 times in a game.
I mean, it's just kind of bad that you have to go that far back. You're like, no, it's 7, no, 8, yeah. 6, so it's shit, it's five. No! Like, oh my gosh. Noonan, how many times could you see Baker throw in this game? I mean, do you think he eclipses 30 in this spot?
No.
Yeah, that's why I'm so hesitant on it, but he's only 5,300.
I know, man. Like, I get it, and I looked at the cornerbacks in this game, and they are all god-awful. Like, Clay Brooks has been a turnstile. All of the cornerbacks they've been rolling out here, it's been like Minnesota South. Like, it does not matter who they roll out to cover pass catchers. It's just like, here, you want catches? You want touchdowns? What else would you like today? Because I'll give it to you. Like, I the first pass that I made of this game, I was like, oh, Baker. And then I was like, but he's going to throw it like 22 damn times. Like, that, I want to get there. I just don't know if I can, man. Like, we're asking for a lot out of efficiency off of probably not much volume at all. Like, it's crazy, man. So before we move on from all of this Chubb talk and all of our Chubb love, we got to mention here, support for Fade the Chalk is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels, man. The Manscaped engineer team has perfected the greatest trimmer for south of the equator. They just released their new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. This battery lasts up to 90 minutes, and you can even use this bad boy in the shower. So head over to manscaped.com, get 20% off and free shipping with the code FTN. That's the code FTN at manscaped.com. You get 20% off and free shipping. All right, guys, so on to a game which might not give you any kind of Chubb action. New York Giants are heading to Cincinnati. The Giants are actually favored by 6. The over-under is set at 44. Noonan, tell me your thoughts here, man. I've heard some Daniel Jones loving out on Twitter. I've heard people talking about him. Do you like this game at all?
Yeah, I get the Daniel Jones thing. He's been a pretty willing runner as of late, which is obviously ideal in a quarterback situation, knowing that they're just, the floor is raised. So we can't feel really good about anything on the Cincinnati side. They obviously they know what they have in Ryan Finley, so they're rolling out Brandon Allen, who is one of many really, really, really cheap quarterbacks this week. I can't get there on Brandon Allen. It makes it really hard to get there on any of the Cincy offensive players. They're also probably running out Samaje Perine or, you know, Williams in the backfield. Like, I just don't know what to expect out of Cincinnati. They just have been such a fun team all season with the pass-happy nature of Burrow and all that comes along with it. Now we really don't know what to expect. The Giants, to be favored by 6 on the road is wild. Coming off of a bye, they won 2 straight in that porous division heading into the bye. You know, they're going to be able to run the ball here. You're seeing it's pretty strong efficiency from them lately on the ground. I think that's, you know, raised by Daniel Jones' willingness to run. Wayne Gallman pops a little bit. He's pretty dirt cheap. You know, he's working a little bit in the passing game. You're able to run on the Bengals' worst adjusted line yard mark in the league. They are 29th in EPA over the last 5 weeks. So makes some sense why Gallman and Jones are being talked about a little bit. And Sterling Shepard's a guy that just rolls out of bed and gets 6 targets. And it's obviously a great spot for him too. I guess you can consider Boyd, if you're looking to stack this game. He is just so cheap, even though, you know, Brandon Allen is a quarterback, he'll probably avoid Bradbury in the slot, and he's 5K. You know, it's not going to take much for him to pay off value in a bring back spot, but I don't know that I'm going to go out of my way to stack a game that has a total at 43.
Yeah, man. Like, so this game actually kind of stuck out a little bit. I like the Gallman call. I think that there's a lot of different ways, and some of this is going to depend on where people come in at on this game. I think Gallman could get some steam this week. And if you look at Sterling Shepard and Darius Slayton prices, like they priced all three of these guys right around each other. So can you get some leverage off of if Gallman does catch some steam this week? Slayton's at 4,900. Shepard, you talked about, just rolls out of bed, gets like 7 to 8 to 9 targets weekly. He has the red zone role. Like, since week 7, Slayton has 0 red zone targets, but Shepard has 4. But if you're looking for the deep passing role, that's all Slayton. So I think there's some ways to get different. I like this game from a mini correlation standpoint. I'm probably not going to stack it up. I get the Daniel Jones love this week. I really do. But for me, this game looks like more of, I'm probably going to correlate, like, not one-off plays, but correlate, like, run 2 of these guys and just have a mini correlation in my lineups. And I want to bring up T. Higgins here, man. Like, I think that people are going to go away from him. I like him this week. Brandon Allen is not a sexy name, but in a very, very limited sample size, and again, I know this is limited, but when he did start last year, he was actually, like, quietly effective when he went deep. I mean, amongst 54 quarterbacks with 5 or more deep attempts, dude was 3rd in deep passer rating, 4th in deep adjusted completion percentage. T. Higgins is leading the NFL in deep targets right now. And we look at, like, some of these corners and stuff. I think they can get T. off of James Bradbury. Hell, if Bradbury follows A.J. Green and not T. Higgins in this spot, you look at the other side, Isaac Yiddum has been absolutely terrible. So even if T. Higgins, who's been playing, they've been moving him around. He's basically 30% in every spot on the formation. So he's going to get some slot time. He's going to get some time on the opposite side of the field. If he gets off of Bradberry, even if they want to stick Bradberry on him some, I think that T. Higgins is a really sneaky play out of this game. I don't think anybody wants to play him because, yes, it's Brandon Allen. Joe Burrow is not in this game. But what we've seen from Brandon Allen, like, dude, Cortland Sutton wasn't bad when Allen was under center. And he had a huge, like, he was basically just locked on to Cortland Sutton whenever he was the quarterback. Three starts, 6 of his 11 deep targets as the starter for those 3 weeks all went to Cortland Sutton. So if that role is for T. Higgins, we could see Allen just zoom in on T. Higgins and say, all right, baby, let's go. But am I off here, Adam?
Not really, especially because, like, they price Higgins down so much at 4,700. The only thing I worry about is, like, Burrow and Higgins had this legitimate connection. Like I talked about, they were working out with each other before the NFL draft, and then obviously they get drafted by the same team. Like, I wonder if Brandon Allen's going to look to Higgins, you know, like Burrow did. But at 4,700, like, and you said, like, if the Giants put James Bradberry and A.J. Green, that's a win for the Bengals. I mean, let's be honest. For me, this game, like, I never thought I would say it, but Wayne Gallman's too cheap. He's 5K. He is dominating the goal line work. Since week 8, he is tied for second in inside the 5 carries, inside the 5 touchdowns, rather, with 4. It's pretty much like Kamara, Antonio Gibson, Josh Jacobs, and Dalvin Cook, the only players with more carries inside the 5 than Wayne Gallman during that span. Like Noonan said, they're 6.5, 6-point favorites on the road against a pretty weak Bengals defense. So, yeah, I like Gallman a lot in this game. Probably my top play from this one. Daniel Jones is fine. Like, he's rushed for over 40 yards in, like, 6 games this year, which is really nice. Shepard is, like, a really nice floor play most weeks. So, like, in cash, I have no problem with him. And then the Giants defense at 3,200, if you want to go to them. It's not as appealing with Finley not starting, but they're still definitely in play. That's probably it for me, though. Like, Gio's limited in practice with a concussion. If he plays, I don't really want to play him. If he doesn't play, I still don't want to play P. Ryan or Travion Williams.
I was supposed to say, you're not going to be on the Samaje P. Ryan train?
I'm good. I'm all right.
Good for Brandon Allen for getting a second chance, even though he needs to throw the ball downfield with both hands because his hands are so small.
It's like, hey, shot, man, put it. Look,
then he would just basically look like, I don't know, probably half of what Phillip Rivers looks like on his throws.
Yeah.
All right, man. So heading over to Miami is going to face the New York Jets. The over-under set at 44.5. The Dolphins are favored by 7. Noonan, what are your thoughts on this game?
Oh, man, I think if there's any, well, we have some injury news, I think, that we have to kind of parse out before making any concrete calls here. But, you know, it looks like Sam Darnold is tracking to play. I think that impacts, you know, receivers here. I mean, we see Darnold being very, very content feeding Jamison Crowder in the slot, where when we've seen Flacco in play, Crowder's really not involved. You know, Flacco way more DGAF in his game, still willing to push it downfield to Perriman and Mims. You know, Mims dirt cheap, Perriman still pretty cheap as well. But we know Miami perimeter you know, corners have been pretty outstanding for most of the year. The way that you can attack them is to run against them, and that leads to Frank Gore, who, that's the last I'm going to say about that. Do not play him. There are other ways to go for sure, even though he's, you know, set for 15, you know, touches here. On the Miami side, we don't know what's going to happen with Myles Gaskin. You know, Salvon Ahmed missed practice with a shoulder injury. A really good spot, obviously, for grown-ass man Devontae Parker. It should be a really good spot for him if you are trusting anything with Tua. The Tua Fitz stuff last week was really strange, but, you know, they're bouncing back with him, and we know that the Jets don't have anyone. They don't have any. Even their rush defense, which is pretty solid early in the year, is starting to slip off with some trades and stuff that they've made. Yeah, I mean, really going to be, for the most part, I think, a game to avoid for me. But, you know, one-offs like Parker makes sense.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think some more one-offs or some minis here make a lot of sense. Like, the Jets are just terrible. Like, it does not matter. I could run through all of the names of who they could possibly run out there and start. And the only thing that you need to know is they're all terrible. Absolutely terrible. Like, Does not matter. Does not matter who is covering Dolphins wide receivers. So Parker's in play. I think that he could definitely get behind this defense multiple times. His ceiling is firmly in play. So if you wanted to go Parker and Crowder, hell, if you even wanted to go super cheap and large field stuff and you wanted to go Jakeem Grant, we know he's got speed, man. The Jets are 32nd against deep passing. Can they give up a long one to Jakeem Grant in this one? I'm not going to tell you that they can't. So he's in play. But, yeah, I'm with you. I think this is definitely a spot where I like some plays, have some mini correlations in this one. And I'm firmly with you, Noonan. I will not play Frank Gore. I cannot play Frank Gore. There's no way in hell I will play Frank Gore. I cannot do it, man. There's just no damn way.
Yeah, this is the old school bring back here if you want to get cute and you want to get a piece of this game, because I don't hate the Grant thing. I mean, there's some low-key, you know, Tyreek Hill vibes going on there. And Miami has a fantastic special teams, and I think it's an underrated thing, especially in, you know, handicapping games or not a massive piece of any DFS research, but it matters in games. And Grant is often involved in punt returns. We know that the Miami defense has been, you know, opportunistic. So, you know, if you wanted to bring back, maybe use one of the Jets receivers, depending on what happens at quarterback, and using Grant's kind of correlated with the Miami defense, you kind of get that double dip if there's a return touchdown.
Ooh, I like that one. I like that call. Adam, are you playing Frank Gore? Is he a lock for you this week?
Yeah, he's the first person I put in my lineup. really, like
you playing head-to-heads?
Yeah. Like, you said you're not playing Frank Gore, so I guess you're just 965 yards and a chance of a touchdown, I guess.
It's really sexy, man, but if I'm going to go that process. Way, if I'm going to go that way, I'll just go with Wayne Gallman and enjoy my two touchdowns.
Yeah. the real standout is Devontae Parker here. So Preston Williams has missed the last two games because he's on IR. Parker's averaging 8 targets per game. During those two games, he is second in the NFL in end zone targets behind Adam Thielen, who's led that category all season long. So that's good to see. Parker scored last week. The Jets secondary, I mean, they were bad in the first place, and they waived Pierre Desir. They got injuries. Like, their corners are so bad. So I like Parker a lot. Crowder becomes more interesting with Sam Darnold expected to play. He's averaging 11.5 targets per game with Darnold this year compared to 7 per game without him. But he's kind of priced awkwardly, like, where like, I know Miami is a team that you want to target in the middle of the field more than on the boundaries, but, like, what's really his ceiling at 5,400? Like, I don't know. Like, if I get to him and he's, like, kind of like the last piece of my lineup and I love my lineup, sure. Like, he should give me a decent floor with Darnold back. And then, yeah, we don't really know what's going on with the Miami backfield right now. Gaskin could return. Savon Ahmed, like Noonan said, is dealing with the shoulder. So that's kind of an avoid for me right now. And yeah, Tua, assuming he's the starter again, 5,900, it's a little too expensive for me for Tua. There's plays I like a lot more. Like, there's, like, why the hell would you play Tua at 5,900 when you can play Derek Carr at 5,700?
I mean, for me, it's just why play Tua when I can just play Parker and probably get 80%, 85% possibly.
Yeah, like, Tua's ceiling for yards, like, 220.
Yeah. Well, they're not, like, we're talking about Tua, like, his volume expectations and Baker's are not that much different, man. They're not letting him sling it outside of that one game. Like, I think he's been, what, like, 22, 25, 28, somewhere around there, pass attempts weekly?
20, 25, 28, and then the 22 was the Rams game, which they, you know, the defense did everything. So, yeah, he hasn't thrown for more than 28 passes once.
Yeah, so, I mean, for me, that caps it. And if that's the case, like, I'm not going to get cute. I'm not going to play Tua. I'll just play Parker, Jakeem Grant as one-offs, or, like, we're talking about have a mini stack here. All right, man, so moving on to Las Vegas Raiders are heading to play the Atlanta Falcons. The over-under is at 54. The Raiders are favored by 3. Noonan, how much do you love Darren Waller this week?
Gotta love Darren Waller this week. Mostly it's just part of it is the position as a whole, though, you know, using 4-for-4's schedule adjusted fantasy points allowed, Atlanta's the worst team in the league by a really sizable margin to tight ends. So it's a great spot for Waller. This game is interesting. I mean, we've seen multiple weeks this season where we haven't had Julio or Calvin Ridley, and the ceiling for this Falcons offense just isn't the same without it. We've seen pretty pedestrian play from Matt Ryan, though the Raiders make that a little bit easier for anybody involved. They are pretty friendly to all comers on offense. They really give it up a ton. So, you know, we love these game scripts that could be positive for Josh Jacobs. He becomes really interesting. We need to see injury reports there, both for him, which I imagine he's probably fine. But as far as the other backs there too, Jalen Richard, him being out, which has happened the last couple of games, raises a little bit more of a passing game expectation, you know, for Jacobs, because that's really the bugaboo with him. If this gets flipped on its side, you're looking at a chance for him playing, you know, 55, 60% of the snaps with no passing game work. That makes it really strong to pay his $7,200 price on DraftKings. So if it is a spot where the Raiders go in and roll, where we have a limited Julio or a Julio being out, you know, I think that there's a spot for the Raiders to roll and Jacobs can crush. We know if one of the two was out, play the other, you know, really becomes just a massive target hog without Jones in the lineup. The ancillary pieces don't excite me too much. I wish we were seeing more Henry Ruggs for all the crazy, surprising efficiency that is tied to the Raiders offense this year. I mean, they're fourth in EPA over the last 5 weeks. It's been pretty much a top five offense all season long. Even though sometimes you have really pedestrian outputs from Derek Carr, one target on a season low 32 snaps for Henry Ruggs last week. Just really frustrating that they're not finding a way to use him better. This is a great spot for him too. He'd be a great differentiator, but instead we have to look at Nelson Agholor to kind of fill that need. So I really want to wait and see what happens with both teams on the injury front. That really impacts what I'm doing with Julio Ridley and Jacobs. But Waller is kind of a, I don't want to say autoplay, but man, it's him and Kelsey for sure.
Oh, dude, I saw, as soon as I opened up the slate, I saw Waller versus Atlanta, and I was like, let's go, baby!
$1,000 savings is huge, too. I mean, it's huge on the slate. Even though there are some value options, like, give me that $1,000 in cash for sure.
Well, and so this game is really interesting because, like you're talking about, I think this game, I'm more on the side of not stacking this game, and I think a lot of people are going to look at stacking this game. I think there's a lot of different ways that you could play this game, and I think there's a lot of different ways this game could go absolutely sideways. Like you're talking about, Noonan, like, Ryan has not been good whenever he's been missing one of his top, whenever it's not been Julio and Ridley both playing, then we see Ryan just, like, he wilts, he falls apart, and this Falcons offense is banged up, man. Like, Julio, limited practice with the hammy. Ridley's got the foot issue. He has limited practices. Todd Gurley has logged DMPs all week. Olsen has had some kind of illness, DMPs. Hurst has not practiced, and we're recording this Friday morning. He hasn't practiced this week with an ankle issue. So I think that this, and this is all a really, really long-winded way to say that, as crazy as it sounds, he's not going to be chalk. We're not facing the chalk week for this guy, but we've seen him pop off in some weeks. Zacchaeus is on my radar in some fashion. At 3,800, when we've seen some of these wide receivers be out for the Falcons, and the reason I bring him up is because what we want to target in DFS, what you're looking for is deep targets, man. The Raiders are 27th in the league versus deep passing. When one of these options has been banged up, so you're looking at the weeks where Zacchaeus got snaps. He had 6 targets, 9 targets, 4 targets, and that was his bust chalk week. 6 targets. 25 targets overall in those 4 games. 6 of those. So 24% of his targets were deep targets. That is 31st. If you were to pace that out for the whole season, that'd be 31st in the NFL, behind, right behind John Brown. And versus a Raiders team that, look, they're terrible. You can beat them deep. If this entire offense is banged up, I'm not willing to stack this game. But yes, Ridley, Waller, we're talking about Jacobs. Zacchaeus is a guy. There are so many cheap wide receiver options that are in play this week. He's a guy that I'm going to keep monitoring injury reports, and I do have interest walking into the week. But am I crazy, Noonan?
No, I totally get it. I mean, like you said, Matt Ryan is where we'd want to go in the stack. I mean, I get the price on Derek Carr, but there are just weeks where they crush and his game logs are pretty pedestrian. So, like, he's not a guy that I necessarily want to prioritize this week. I really want guys that are running, ideally, in most spots as a tiebreaker. So, Yeah, I mean, some of the guys make sense, like Waller, but do I want a stack in this game? Not necessarily. I mean, we've both said Matt Ryan without one of the two is just really pretty average. So it is a game that will get some ownership based on the total, but it's not one that I'm going to try to go overweight on.
I think a lot of people are – so if Julio is out or Ridley is out, you're going to see – obviously people love to play these Falcons wide receivers. I think it's an interesting way and a cheap way to be different. Instead of going Julio or Ridley and correlating him with Waller, going Waller and then Zacchaeus on the other side. It's a way to save salary this week. Adam, what are your thoughts on this game, man? Do you love a lot of the pieces out of it? And we talked about Gurley. Are you willing to even consider Brian Hill? Well, because we've seen the show. We've seen what it looks like. And he's disappointed people in the past. Would you go back there if Gurley was out?
Yeah, so I'll probably sprinkle him into some lineups to save some salary. It really depends on your roster construction. Like, say you wanted to go a Kelce Waller lineup. I think that could be interesting. But other than that, like, it still scares me. I will say from this game, though, if Julio, he's a game-time decision, or he's expected to be. If he gets ruled out, it'll be hard for me not to play Calvin Ridley if he's good to go. He's played three games since entering the league with Julio out. In those games, Ridley's averaging 11 targets, over 20 DK points, and over 112 receiving yards per game. And the Raiders, I mean, Travion Mullen, just I don't think he can cover Calvin Ridley. He's allowing around 14 yards per catch. So I love Ridley. Hayden Hurst, like, even if he was healthy, we talked about it on one of the podcasts earlier in the week. Like, his game logs when Julio's been out or limited, he's been bad. Like, I don't know if it's just because Julio takes away so much attention or he creates so much more room for Hurst to kind of operate in the middle of the field, but he's been bad. So as someone who's played a lot of Hayden Hurst this year, I won't have Hayden Hurst if he's in or out. Doesn't matter. I get the Zacchaeus call. I kind of like that. And then, yeah, for the Raiders, I mean, Darren Waller is in an absolute just monstrous spot here. Falcons are bottom three in pretty much every category against tight ends. Receptions, yards, touchdowns, fantasy points. Waller's got a 28.1% target share, which leads all tight ends. So it's hard to see him failing in this game. And, yeah, you hope the Falcons, you know, you kind of hope if you want to play some of these Raiders, you kind of hope the Falcons have Julio and can keep up. They are at home, which is nice. And, like, when they're right, like, the Falcons should be able to score in this game. So, like, if they can keep it close and keep, you know, Derek Carr throwing, that'll be great for Derek Carr, who finally eclipsed, you know, 25 or so pass attempts in his last game and was good. Like, he's been pretty good this year. So I'll have some Carr and Waller stacks and run it back with Ridley. And if that game stays close, I think all three of those guys could be really good. Jacobs is the one I'm kind of uncertain about because I think I like Chubb more at their price. He was downgraded to limited with a injury on Wednesday or Thursday. I think it was Thursday with, a hip. And, like, you've talked about this a lot, D-Bro. Atlanta, on a per-carry basis, has been pretty good. They're still giving up a lot of receptions to running backs again. But, you know, Jacobs is in that, like, 2-4 range in receptions max. And some games will only get one catch. So I might be – I don't know if I'm going to fade him, but I don't see myself getting into a lot of Josh Jacobs in this game.
I think it's going to be really interesting, man. Like, if you look at that 7K range for running backs, there's a lot of guys we've already talked about. But, I mean, Noonan, look at this, man. Like, Derrick Henry is at 7,900, Jacobs at 72, Chubb's at 7,100, and then you have Mike Davis. I mean, can we say that people are probably, if they're going to be clicking in this range, probably going to go to Jacobs and Chubb, and then they're going to overlook Henry and Mike Davis here?
Yeah, no, I think that's completely correct. I want to like Jacobs. I like him as a football player. It's a guy that I continue to short. Like, I don't know how many times I rostered him definitely in week one because it was just kind of the perfect spot. But other weeks, he's just an easy avoid, especially on DraftKings because of
and people like him. They play him. Like, he always picks up steam. And there's some weeks where, like, if you head over to FTN Daily, you look at Kyle Murray's roster percentages and his projections, like, Jacobs is popping near the top. And I'm like, what? Like, why? Like, tell me the process here. Like, there's been some weeks, am I alone in that, where you, like, you head over there and you're like, why the hell is Josh Jacobs at, like, 20%? Like, I think people really want to play him, and I don't know if I get there, man. Like, we're talking about that range. I think that there's going to be running backs that are right around him that are going to carry a third of the roster percentage that he will.
Yeah, if he's going to be owned, he's an easy, easy fade. I absolutely agree. Again, even with we have, you know, limited Rashard or no Rashard, and we have, you know, Booker still there, like there's still a chance, like Fife said, where we're looking at maybe three targets. Like, it's just not enough. You need touchdowns. You need probably two touchdowns. And that's just really hard to book in and bake into your expectation. So, yeah, I mean, if we start to see as we head into the weekend, there's going to be ownership there. He is an easy, easy fade.
Yeah, definitely agree here, man. So, all right, moving on to what – this is a really interesting game. I've diced this one up, and this is going to be a great one for us to break down here. The Cardinals are heading to face the Patriots. Over-under is at 49.5. The Cardinals are favored by 1.5. Noonan, what are your thoughts here, man? This one, I mean, we've got so many usage paradigms here with running backs on both sides of the ball. Where are you going in this game?
I think we'll probably have Kyler with his shoulder injury being fine. I mean, it's been 10 days. It's probably going to be okay. That obviously creates a totally different scenario for Arizona, who I don't think has ever been a favorite in New England. They don't go to New England very often. You know, New England's not dogs at home very often, definitely not to the Cardinals historically. So this is kind of a weird one, but yeah, the Patriots side losing, you know, no Isaiah Wynn, who's the best offensive lineman. The Rex Burkhead injury last week impacts them too, because really it's Damian Harris. We'll have Sony Michel active. We know that they are complete air balls in the passing game. So this really funnels a lot of work all of a sudden to James White. The Patriots target running backs on 29% of their dropbacks. It's a pretty high mark. And, you know, White, we saw that kind of emerge last week, even early in the game, pre-Burkhead injury. He was very much a part of their game script. We know that they are more game script dependent than any team. They really just come in with, here's how we're going to attack today. And they're really forced into White being very, very active in a pace-up spot, in a spot that's probably going to be trailing. It's really hard to use one of your running back positions, especially on DraftKings. They feel so valuable. But a guy like White at 4,500, who's having, you know, probably a 6 to 7 target floor in this spot, becomes pretty interesting as far as bring backs. If you're wanting to go with Kyler, if you're wanting to go with, you know, maybe some of these ancillary pieces outside of Hopkins. I mean, look, Gilmore is still fantastic. He might not be defensive player of the year fantastic anymore. You know, I worry a lot less about wide receiver cornerback matchups than I think others do. I think there's just, we obviously have Hopkins, who's an alpha. Now without Fitz, we have maybe some Isabella popping at 3K if he really starts to emerge, you know, it starts to get those snaps. Otherwise, it's really hard to get into any of the other guys. I mean, Kenyon Drake has outcarried Edmonds 27-10 over the past 2 weeks. He's pretty cheap in a game where they're going to be able to run. New England's just been awful. I mean, they've been awful defensively, which, considering what we had last year, is really hard to say. 32nd in EPA overall over the past 5 weeks, 31st on dropbacks, 28th against the run. You mean they're giving it up all over the place. So having some Cardinals, I mean, getting up to Murray is pretty hard. He's expensive. But again, his floor with his rushing upside is just immense. So, you know, White's a guy that I'd be interested in to see what the ownership numbers look like.
Yeah, man. Like, I just... this game, and the hard part about playing Cardinals running backs is, are you just wanting to play Kyler? It's like...
correct. That's the thing. They have no touchdown upside. Yeah.
It's rough, too, because you're just like, okay, well, yay, I love the matchup on the ground. And it's like, well, shit, should I just love Kyler even more? And do I fade the running backs? Or is this a rando two touchdown game for Edmonds or Drake? Or, like, if I had hair, I'd be pulling it out. Because you're just like, you don't know where the matchup goes and who gets the touchdowns. And you're really just hoping and praying that you walk out of Sunday and you're like, okay, I don't hate myself, because the Cardinals are just going to do what they want to do and give different guys a lot of looks on the ground. And I love the Isabella call here. The Patriots have been bad versus slot wide receivers. Like, Jonathan Jones has been terrible. Isabella's been, when he's been on the field this year and he's running... so if you look at the with Fitzgerald out of this game, Isabella's the guy that's fourth in routes. He has been playing 80% in the slot. Jonathan Jones has been terrible. Like, he's been targeted 61 times, 41 receptions, 102 passer rating in his coverage. I like Isabella a ton in this game. I think it's a good attack point for the Cardinals passing attack. My whole problem with it, I'm probably going to play a lot of one-offs in this game, Because what the hell do we do with the Patriots side? Like, people are like, all right, well, what about James White, baby? Burkhead's out. And I'm like, you do realize, like, Sonny Michel is probably going to be active and play in this game, right? And then we got Damian Harris. And then you got the goal line back that is Cam Newton. And the pass catchers for the Patriots. I mean, if you want to go with any of these guys, like, N'Keal Harry's just not good. Damian Bird, like, I played him in recent weeks, and then I don't play him, and then he pops off. Jacoby Myers has no red zone role to speak of. We could talk about weighted opportunity. We could talk about target share with him. But literally, if we play Jacoby Myers, it's only for yardage. If he gets a touchdown, it's more fluky than it is good process. And I just, if I'm correlating, I feel like this game is a bunch of one-offs on the Cardinals side. Because the Patriots, dear God in heaven, I do not know what the hell to do with them. Adam, do you have a better lean than I do?
No, man, like, we talk, I don't really like this game because we talked about it earlier in the week. Like, the Patriots, I view them as, like, a good, bad team, and I don't know on a given week when they're going to be throwing 40 times like last week. Like, I don't think the Cardinals are a team that's, like, going to come in and be, like, just blowing them out. Like, I don't think Arizona's that good, especially on the road, and I don't think New England's that bad. So, like, if they go back to 25, 26 pass attempts, James White probably gets 4 or 5 targets. You know, and is he worth playing at that price? I don't know. Then you have Damian Harris, who, you know, we don't know what Sonny Michel's role is going to be, and we still have Cam Newton inside the five running the football plenty. Jacoby Myers was the clear one the last couple weeks prior to last week, but he got priced up a little bit. Damir Bird, revenge game. I don't know how he didn't lead with that. I mean,
someone... That's on me. That's my bad.
Someone needs to put their notes in order, because that was the first thing I wrote up when I wrote up the slate. But in all seriousness, like, he's not a terrible play at 4,100. I don't know, like, this is probably the worst game of tight end options I've ever seen since doing fantasy analysis. Like, you're not playing any tight ends from this game. You want to play Ryan Izzo or Dan Arnold, be my guess. Like, I don't. And then Kyler's kind of like, you know, the floor's there, but in tournaments, like, I'd rather play Allen, I'd rather play Herbert, I'd rather play probably Patrick Mahomes. So it's like, I don't like this game. Like, Hopkins, is he in play? Sure, but he's 8,100 against Stephon Gilmore, who, yeah, is not... Like, I feel like there's no corner this year that's been as good as they were in years past. I think defense has just been down as a whole this year. But, like, am I going to play Hopkins over Keenan Allen? Probably not, and there's other cheaper receivers I like. Like, I don't like this game, and I think that could be weird, but, like, New England's so tough to figure out right now with how they're... Their offense is looking, their running backs, and the fact that I don't know what the game script's going to be here.
Yeah, for me, it's, do I play it? Because running back overall this week is getting nastier by the second. Like, we're getting news that now Austin Eckler is unlikely to play this week, which really hurts my heart. Like, I feel the dagger slowly
deepening. Yeah, Noonan just DM'd me. He said, all right, I'm going to head out.
I don't know why Adam didn't... text me on that. That's
I mean, what we're talking about, got to get your notes right. All right, so
I'll hit him up real quick. I think he's rewatching yesterday's Michigan College Hoops game. We watched that together while we DM'd, but I'll have to figure it out.
Yeah, definitely let us know what Shifty tells you. I mean, I know you two follow each other on Twitter. Y'all are BFFs.
Yeah, you have to call him Shifty, bro. You have to call him Shifty, but Noonan's...
I do. He's on a first-name basis, so we'll just lean to Noonan here. Let him just drop all the DMs and the Shifty bombs in the FTN Discord. All right, everyone, that is the DFS Game by Game episode for this week. You need to head over to FTNDaily.com, get signed up with the promo code FTC. All three of us are going to head over there. You need to be checking out the site. We're going to go continue the rest of the game by game for the rest of the slate over at FTNDaily.com. We want to thank Ryan Uno again for stopping by the show. And if you have not gotten entered to win this signed Will Fuller mini helmet, what in the hell are you waiting for? You need to head over to iTunes. Give us a rate review, screenshot said review, and slide up into the DMs at ChalkFade on Twitter. Get signed up for this. We're going to give it away as soon as we hit 200 reviews. Adam and I are going to be back next week to be checking out the Sunday night recap. Adam is going to walk through all of this week's action. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.